Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
Wow. Just simply wow. What a day. Just a good time to be alive. Is there nothing like October in terms of a sports fan? We're going to start things before we go Niners, before we get into the first weekend of college football in October, before we talk about what's going on in Major League Baseball. Yes, Giants, you got to get back to the postseason. Nothing more thrilling. Dan DeBone alongside Evan Giddings for the next 3 hours, but we start things at the crack of dawn. It must have been pitch black when my boy was rolling out of bed. And headed where? You take it from there. What's going on with you this morning?
First of all, Devon, I'm working on my 17th cup of coffee at this point. I woke up, had my first one, all black pour about 4:15 a.m., had to take the dog out right before I moseyed on over to the great city of Berkeley, California. Well, right below Memorial Coliseum at the Glade, the Memorial Glade, College Game Day was on absolute fire. I know it's wrapping up right now. Marshawn Lynch is making his pick as we speak. The great California Golden Bear that he is. However, I just got to give a shout out to the entire fan base and really the alumni network, everyone even on the Miami side. All college football fans showed out in Berkeley today, and from really about 11 p.m. last night when they stormed the gates, they broke down the barricades multiple times. There are kids that are passed out right now all across the Berkeley campus, whether they're catching a nap, whether they're catching their second wind, whether they're puking and rallying. Everyone right now in the city of Berkeley is revving things up because College Game Day came, they conquered, and they were absolutely fantastic. So my hats off to everybody there. I was there at 5 a.m. People were rolling out of bed, you know, lazy-eyed or bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I don't know what they were on. I don't know what they were smoking. I don't know what they were drinking. But everyone was having a fantastic time. It was a great event.
So I was a little skeptical. When I hear game day coming to Berkeley, I'm glad they represented, because there's a part of me that's thinking, this isn't the SEC. This isn't the Big 12. Football doesn't necessarily...
Oh, it's the ACC now.
Oh, it's the ACC.
It's the ACC home opener for California.
I get it, but there's a sense of reservation that they're not going to show out like they do around the rest of the country. This is Berkeley. It's an academic institution, but you're telling me, they just went hard and represented.
Yeah, woke over Coke is the the motto of today for California. No, look, everyone showed out, man, and it was, you know, it was a fantastic time. And I was a little bit skeptical too, because I was curious as to, like, Cal has had better teams, right? Cal has had the likes of Marshawn Lynch, Aaron Rodgers was on a top four team that was a field goal kick away from maybe heading to the Rose Bowl. They've had fantastic teams throughout the 70s, the 80s. You go all the way back to the big game. They've won national championships even dating back to the 50s. This is a storied program, but they have never once hosted College Game Day, and I think they're now one of five four programs, but power conferences, to have never hosted game day before. And I think a little bit had to do with Miami coming in, a lot of juice with the U. I think ushering in the ACC, also, of course, televised on ESPN, had a little bit to do with it. But from what I saw after the Auburn win on the road, there was a flood of this kind of California Golden Bear social media, just an avalanche of Calgarithm is what they're calling it. So Calgarithm swept social media, they got on the map, and they were able to draw one of the most nationally well-known shows in college sports, in all of sports, quite frankly, to Berkeley. And so I was glad to see that people showed up and showed out, and that College Game Day was rewarded by its choice to come to Memorial.
So there are 10-point dogs to the University of Miami. The football game going off today. Of course, if you don't know, Cal now part of the ACC. If you're wondering why Miami is coming to town, that'll kick off this evening in front of a nationally televised audience. I think McAfee just made his pick. But really quick, take me back. So you said that the gates opened at 11 o'clock last night?
No. They weren't supposed to open at 11 o'clock last night. But just like the gates of Troy, they opened from within. All right. These, I don't know if it was college students. I don't know if it was a couple homeless people. I don't know who, but somebody broke down the barricades last night as just a waterfall of navy blue and gold started flooding into the Glade. And eventually it kind of filtered out. And then there was the second wave that came in at approximately 3 a.m. And then I was more with the third wave, maybe some of the elder crowd. You know, instead of Irish coffee, it was just black coffee. That's what we were drinking rolling rolling in there and just having a caffeinated time and enjoying the vibes. The band was out there playing. I tried to sneak into the VIP section with the cheerleaders, but they wouldn't let me in. They ended up catching me. So I tried to go a little bit undercover, but now I'm here with you, Dan, and I cannot wait to rock over the next 3 hours.
Yeah, you are going. I mean, woo! Usually you just sort of like ease your way into the day. Kind of like, you know, when I get into the bay, I just start ankle deep, and then eventually I start getting into a swim. But it's usually after I'm lathered a bit. And that's how typically I find my partner, Ev, when we do Saturday mornings. I walked in today and it was just, let's go! Let's go! So tell me about Pat McAfee has become a star at ESPN. And he is, if you watch Game Day, he certainly is a guy that's front and center. And that pretty much held true this morning. Is that what you're telling me?
Pat McAfee, look, I know he's an acquired taste for a lot of people, and his show is pretty interesting. It's definitely moving, I would say, sports media, and especially the studio shows, into a new sort of medium. But as a college game day host, as an entertainer, as a performer, as a narrator of live entertainment, Pat McAfee is unmatched. I mean, seriously, like, Nick Saban, maybe the greatest all-time college head coach, move over. The guy was a mute compared to Pat McAfee. Desmond Howard has been on the show for a long time. Move over. Kirk Herbstreit, sorry, I love your X's and O's breakdown. Move over. Lee Corso was unfortunately unable to make it because he was ill. But Pat McAfee took over the Glade right from the get-go. Whether it was, you know, throwing Stanford Steve under the bus in front of the home crowd, whether it was egging on everyone with, you know, roll-on bear chants, Bear Territory songs and medleys. He was out last night.
You know it.
At the Asian Geta. He was out last night at Blondie's. He was patrolling the streets on Telegraph, walking over a skunk. I don't know what he was doing last night. But Pat McAfee came with the kind of energy that I hope to come with for the next 3 hours, because he was just unbelievable.
Don't die on me by 10 o'clock, my man. Just save some of this.
Blondie's. What are you talking about? I'm going back to Berkeley for the game
that's
tonight.
Right, that's right. Blondie's might be the best pizza slice, I think, going out in Cal. For those of you, by the way, that have to be watching Game Day, McAfee just made his pick, and I'd like to know who it is. Of course, we can't watch the program as it happens.
But well, Marshawn Lynch, we do know, is picking the hometown team.
Marshawn Lynch,
he's
of course,
got the Bears.
The pride of Oakland, went to the University of California, I believe, played with Aaron Rodgers.
He was a freshman when Rodgers was a senior.
Yes, J.J. Yeah. Arrington was in that backfield. Very, very talented team back in the day, and the University of California trying to carry that tradition as Wilcox and company. One quick slam on Cal, though. So I happened to watch that game against Florida State.
Well, that was a real barn burner,
huh? Well, yeah, it's just, you know, they didn't get into the end zone. But this whole idea of what Chip Kelly did in revolutionizing the sport was more than 10 years ago. And I think teams have got to move on. Cal isn't, if you watch them tonight, they get into this hurry up. And everybody actually in college football, it's interesting because college football actually set the standard where the NFL was trying to play catch up.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Bill Belichick, that iconic move, actually caught a flight from Boston and he went all the way to Eugene, Oregon to pick the brain of Chip Kelly? Here's Bill Belichick going to the University of Oregon saying, tell me what it is that you're doing here. I want to learn the secret sauce, because they were so innovative. But now, suddenly, it's almost as if they're sort of stuck in their way, and teams are still playing with their hair on fire, going 100 miles an hour. And as I watch Cal make penalty after penalty and illegal procedure after illegal procedure, I'm like, just get in a huddle. All right, just calm down. Get in a huddle. Let's find out what it is that we're doing, and let's work on execution.
Well, I'm just surprised we've gone 10 minutes talking about Cal, and you haven't brought up your boy from Miami, El Cubano, Vincent Mendoza.
Carlos Mendoza, that's right. He is a Yale transfer, I want to say.
So he also went to the same high school, I learned this morning, as Mario Cristobal, the head coach of the University of Miami, who, by the way, if we're talking about home field advantage, dude, they made Cristobal do the interview at like 6:45 in the morning. It was still dark when he graced the television. And you know, as energetic as he was, I just had, like, Wilcox didn't show up, I think, until 8:15, so he got to sleep in another hour. But they made the opposing head coach, already had to travel 5,000 miles, wake up a little bit earlier.
Sleep when you're dead, man. But that's such promotion for the university. There's nothing. First of all, coaches, seriously, they don't sleep this time of the year. And secondly, there's no way. That could have been at 4:30 in the morning, and he's going to do that interview just simply because of the exposure. By the way, just starting at 4 o'clock, what the hell was your dog thinking? Because typically, what time are you walking the dog?
He usually gets up around 6, so he's a little bit early.
So was he just freaked out? Like, what's going on?
Well, I mean, I had to basically drag him outside. It's usually the other way around. He wakes me up at 6, kind of rakes me across the face with those mean right-handed paw, and then I drag him outside. But today it was, all right, buddy, we got to go.
What kind of dog are we talking about here?
We're talking about a little spaniel mix. He's a Springer and a Cocker mix.
I like it.
A Sprocker.
I like that. Both good breeds. I thought anything smaller than that, I'm like, come on, F, what are we doing here?
Yeah, he's about 32 pounds.
Now, that works. You get in just under the wire.
I've been trying to get him on the program.
No, that's good stuff. So you're going to try and roll on through the whole day.
No. I will roll on through the entire day. I'm wired today. So after this show, I'm going to walk down, get my lift in, right? And then I'll drive home, walk the dog
lift,
again.
Lift, not as in you're taking a transportation home. Lift is in you're throwing up the weights.
Yeah. So I'm going to get to the gym. Heavy leg day for your boy. So squats and deadlifts. And just like Cal's going to be squatting Miami later on today, Memorial Coliseum. And then I'll whip it back home, walk the dog again, feed him, get a little extra portion for being a good boy, and then take Bart on over to downtown Berkeley, and the party begins. Because, look, we got playoff baseball today, and in the meantime, between now and 7:30, the late kick on ESPN, which anyone can watch, between Cal and Miami, we got baseball games pretty much all day beginning at 11 a.m., and then the nightcap, I believe, is the Padres and the Dodgers. And, of course, college football is, I mean, just running rampant. I actually was with Matt Steinmetz yesterday, was looking at this line that I love, an early lock of the day.
Oh, here we go.
Tulane minus 18 at UAB, because the Dragons are utterly absurd.
What the hell do you know about either one of those teams? Come on.
All I know is they give up 41 points to Navy, and Navy stinks.
All right. Intervention, Cam. Let's get this man in a room and help him out.
Last week it was the drinking. This week it's the gambling. So pick your poison.
So, but I just want to get back to Cal for a second. I like the excitement. Can they sell out tonight? 63,000 on hand tonight? Are you going to tell me there's 63,000 fans that are going to watch that game tonight? Is it still Memorial Stadium? Assuming it is.
Memorial Coliseum, yeah.
Memorial Coliseum, the retrofit.
I also had my doubts about this because it's one thing to show up to game day at 6 in the morning. Don't get me wrong, that takes commitment. But 13 hours later to then show up to a game that's going to go 3 hours, and then keep it rolling after, you might need a nap or two in between then. So I have my doubts about whether it's a sellout, but I can say the tickets are actually a lot more pricey than I believed.
Well,
usually.
I'm not worried about the student body. Because the student body,
you should be. There was a couple of them on the lawn this morning.
Well, you know what? You sleep it off, and then you get going again at about 5 o'clock, and then you roll right into the game. The student body will they'll be there. I'm worried about, will there be a draw for the fan base? Because college football is something that is obviously just a place where college football goes to die is the Bay Area, basically. When it comes to Stanford and Cal, when you compare it to even other schools of the formerly Pac-12, now, of course, the ACC, when you think about football in the Midwest, and when you think about football certainly out in the SEC where it's a religion, football out here, when it comes to college, there's 14 other things, if not 25 other things that people got to do that are sports fans. So while the student body, I do believe, will be there in numbers, whether they're sober or not, it's a whole other question. I'm more concerned about the football fan in these parts. Are there college football fans in the Bay Area? And will you be there tonight? I'm calling you out, San Francisco in the Bay Area. Will you watch Miami and Cal get after it in front of the country?
So a lot of people might not want to hear this, but I actually think there is going to be a turnout because it's Miami. Now, there's a lot of home support, and the fact that game day is here means that all eyes are on Berkeley, and a lot of people have got their tickets ahead of time, and it's a chance to see, Cal and their ACC home opener and all the rest. But the U is a nationwide brand. And I do think, there was a lot of Miami fans early this morning at game day. So I think
Sam Lubbin, get out of bed.
No, he didn't, surprisingly enough. And Sam, I'm calling you out, because where the hell were you?
No doubt.
He considers himself both a Cal and a University of Miami fan.
Well, I can tell you that Sam, sort of what influenced this man, because I've read the biography, is that it was a Cal versus the University of Miami football game that he attended, and it was a bowl game played out here where the Giants play, and he decided that that's... The influence wasn't on Cal, but it was on Miami, and he decided to pack his bags and head to the East Coast.
Well, I have to imagine it's not all too difficult to get into Coral Gables. it's not exactly a place you need to, ace the ACT for. Cal is a great academic institution, And that place is a little more difficult to kind of wade into the waters when we're talking
school. Well, that's what scares me.
Dude, it's in the middle of midterms and kids were still showing up at 4.
Yeah, good institutions, including Duke, Notre Dame's sort of the outlier, Stanford. You know, they got more important things to do. These guys who are
Why do you think we're not
pre-med,
sports anymore?
Chemically, you know, chemical engineering. It's like, come on, man.
There was a kid who, so they for college game day, they always kick a field goal, right? And if you make the field goal, then you get tuition for, I think it's a full calendar year or something. And the kid missed the first kick, but then the second kick he made, which was for Hurricane Relief, which was for a great cause, rose, I think it was like $100,000. So clutch kick by young Daniel, a sophomore at Cal. But he's talking to McAfee on air right before, and McAfee asked for his major. And I think it was like, I don't know, nautical engineering. It's something complicated. And McAfee just goes, yeah, so what is that? Kid tried to break it down for him on air, and then he had to stop him because he was going too long. I mean, no one wants to hear you explain your major on national television if it's not economics, communications, or business. All right, so someone's got, you need something that everyone at least has heard of before if we're going to be talking about school.
You know, when I was a kid growing up, the big game used to mean something. It was always the last game of the year, not the second to last game, not like, you know, towards the end of the season. No, it's the last game of the year, and it would sell out. Like you were talking 75,000 strong. I think Palo Alto and Stanford held more than that, but you knew about it. Even if you weren't at the game, you would just, as a sports fan in these parts, walking around, you would casually say, who won the big game today? Who won? Now, I don't even think people give a rip anymore.
No.
And I don't know what happened to it. And that used, it's still the rivalry. They obviously play for the Axe. My sisters all went to Cal, so I grew up with that rivalry, know all about it. By the way, Santa Clara and St. Mary's is a rivalry. And they play for, I want to say, a bell. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. Somebody please call in or give me on the chat. I believe they play for a bell.
I know there's a rivalry between St. Mary's and USF. Well, there's kind of like an all-encompassing Bay Area rivalry in the WCC.
Well, I guess it's,
because you also throw Pacific in there, too. There's really 4 local schools.
You know what? That rivalry probably is no longer because they both got rid of their football programs.
Yeah, the only WCC school I believe that has a football team is San Diego. Shout out Jim Harbaugh.
So, just a quick story, because I remember reading about this, because it was one of the greatest pranks when it comes to rivalries. And it was, they would play, I want to say, for a bell. And so if you win, if St. Mary's wins, they get to keep this bell, obviously much like that of the Axe.
Mm-hmm.
And so the week of the game, everybody's trying to steal from Santa Clara. You would try and steal the bell, and you get creative in ways of trying to do that. Therefore, it is literally on guard by student body or maybe by hired security 24/7 the week of the game. So one year, while the bell is at St. Mary's, Santa Clara had a group of guys dressed up as professional cleaners in these white jumpsuits. And so they came in, they said, hey, we're here to polish up and clean the bell before the game. And so they gave the bell to him, but there was like this sort of quasi, we're not really certain about this. And they're walking to the door, and these guys from Santa Clara are saying to themselves, we're about 30 feet away from pulling off the biggest caper in the history of rivalries, certainly this rivalry. So while they're pretending to be cleaners, they got the bell, they're wheeling it out, and then all of a sudden comes the athletic director running down the hall, saying, hold on, hold on! And they're like, oh no. And the athletic director proceeds to open the door for him. Let me get that for you guys. So there you go. So bring back that rivalry, Stanford and Cal, but there's much more going on when it comes to sports in October. There is baseball. I just got to get your thoughts. I know we talk about Pete Alonso. By the way, I'm giggling because I'm listening to sports talk radio locally, and all of a sudden people are like, oh, Pete Alonso should come to the Giants. Yeah, well, if you've listened to us, we've been talking about that for the last 3 months. But let's just talk. I got to know where you were and your thoughts on Alonso going deep. Talk to me about the polar bear. I know you're not a Mets person. You don't like New York, but come on, man.
Oh, first of all, I love the Mets. My uncle lived in Brooklyn for like 40 years, and I texted him after the game, and he is ecstatic. Gave me the entire breakdown of the Phillies-Mets series that's upcoming.
Did you text Jersey Ken, by the way?
No, because I saw him the next day.
Okay, well, come on.
No, actually, I take that back. I think I texted him. I might have had a few. But, Dan, I don't want to talk about it, okay? At least my drinking. So, the Pete Alonso home run, number one. Well, did you see that Devin Williams might have been tipping pitches?
Ooh, didn't hear about that.
Yeah, so there was a slight nod in his glove that aligned with the five pitches. If it was a little more horizontal, it was a changeup, which is the pitch he hit the home run on. And if he was vertical,
would you admit that might be the most effective pitch right now in baseball?
Devin Williams changeup?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
It might be the best pitch in the game. Beforehand, Devin Williams hadn't pitched the full season, but statistically, he might have had a better season than Emmanuel Clase or pick your closer, basically. So the fact that Peter Alonso, number one, hit an opposite field home run was impressive. Number two, hit an opposite field home run off of arguably the best pitch in baseball was impressive. Number three, he hit an opposite field home run off the best pitch in baseball on a 3-1 count when no one should be looking for a changeup is the holy trinity of what the hell is this guy? This guy's on another planet when it comes to hitting baseballs. So,
well, he hasn't been.
No, he hasn't, but that's one of the most clutch hits probably in the history of the Mets.
I want to say in postseason, I mean, that's Travis Ishikawa-esque. I mean, that was, I mean, I know they didn't win the pennant, but when you think about a team that was just left for dead, they hadn't scored a run in like 2 days, and it just, there was no life in that team. But there is, you know, we talked about this, that sometimes, you know, someone from the baseball heavens just comes down and touches you on the forehead and said, it's your year, baby. Because the comebacks, and I know you hear all this crap and it gets thrown around, but the never die attitude, it applies to this team. I mean, that was something else.
Well, Howie Rose had one of the best radio calls I've heard of a clutch home run, especially in postseason, but even just regular season.
You know how critical I am? I've heard it a bunch of times to get excited, but he still needed to lay out. He was just too verbose at the end.
Yeah, but on radio, it's a little bit different to me. Also, it was really cool. I don't know if you saw this, but they played the call, his call, on the plane.
Yeah.
On the plane ride.
Everyone started cheering.
And he was going down the line, just like getting high fives from everybody, went up and thanked Pete Alonso. That was pretty cool. But I also think, I know everyone's really hyped about Pete Alonso now, and you've been bringing it to the airwaves the last 3 months, Dan, and kudos to you. That home run was the nail in the coffin. He ain't coming to San Francisco.
Well, I think it also, from just, again,
why would he leave?
Yeah. Well, it's a matter of dollars and cents. And here's the thing, though. It's from the Giants' perspective, and we'll get into Buster Posey, because I got some things to say.
Yeah, you do.
But just you tell me, how far along is Bryce Eldridge? How far out is he? Because if you're bringing Pete Alonso to be in a bridge, if Bryce Eldridge is on a fast track, you don't need Pete Alonso.
Well, you're not bringing in a player like Alonso to be a bridge. If you're going to sign him, it's going to be for, I would say, a Chapman period of time.
Five, six years
at least.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of players that you're looking for that can be staples of your, you know, cornerstones of your franchise. And whether Eldridge can or can't, well, actually, I take that back. I think he can because he's been incredibly impressive in just one season. So, you know, I don't want to put all my stock in one player, but I think the Giants have reason to believe that they can compete in the next couple of years. I'm a little bit skeptical as to the entire thing that they're trying to pull off at this point. But much like Cal, you know, they're 10-point underdogs right now in the scope of Major League Baseball.
So just really quick to take a look at it from the other vantage point, that being the good folks from Wisconsin and the Milwaukee Brewer fans. And I usually, you know, I look at the state. If I don't have a skin in the game, like, I like Milwaukee. It's a blue-collar town. It's I like the people. It's just good, middle American. Give me a brats. I'm not from California. I'm not, you know, carb loading or watching my carbs.
What are you talking about? You had a wheat with only peanut butter sandwich 2 weeks ago, right before the show.
I couldn't live in Wisconsin. I'm just saying kudos to them who is sucking down the brats and beer and then washing it down with a pizza. Yeah, God bless you. I love Wisconsin. Like, there's certain places I'm like, I can identify with
them. The cheese curds, Dan. Cheese curds.
Meanwhile, if it's Texas, I could give a rip about you. I hope you lose every game by 10 runs or 10 touchdowns. But Wisconsin? No, I like it.
I'll take their gas prices.
But I'll take New York in this. And my goodness, the shots of the crowd with that going into the ninth inning with a 3-0 lead, and the Mets had no pulse, and they were just sensing a celebration, and they were on their feet for every pitch and just randomly cheering. They were smelling Philadelphia and moving on to a divisional series. and they're all standing as one, ready for a celebration. And that's the other side of the coin. Just to see their hearts ripped out was painful. But that's all part of it, man.
Well, that's also apropos for Milwaukee. I mean, this is a team that has, I feel like, been the butt of a lot of playoff jokes as of late. But that was their first win, game two, in like the last 10 tries. I think the last big wild card game that they played in, which actually sprung the Washington Nationals World Series run, was the one-game wild card in 2019. And I remember Trent Grisham diving for, not catching a ball off the bat of Juan Soto. It was like a basis clearing error that ended up giving the Nationals the win. They go on to beat the Astros in the World Series. So who knows? Maybe this is the beginning of a Miracle Mets run, because the Milwaukee Brewers seem to be at the center of it all.
By the way, Alonso knew he got that. Like the minute he's you can hear him just scream. Like he knew he was probably the only guy that was, he knew that he squared it up. And then, and this is underrated, and I hope this comes back, because guys are trying to get so creative with their celebrations, especially in baseball. All he did when he hit first base, and I like to do this from time to time, especially when Cease puts together an amazing meal, just simply give me the chef's kiss. A chef's kiss, baby.
That was really good.
Oh, that was awesome.
Well, the man is built to hit home runs. And he's done it enough times that he knows. By the way, I know, with all due respect to Ken Griffey Jr. or whoever else you put in this category, Pete Alonso's the best home run derby hitter I've ever seen.
Well, that's the knock on him. So I got buddies.
Post-derby?
I got buddies in New York who were just vilifying him before that home run. I had to hang up on a buddy. He's like, that's all he does. Get an all-star game or home run derby. We need you now. Where are you? You can't hit. I'm done with Alonso. And of course, the next day, he's like, yeah, baby, Alonso.
Alonso's back, baby.
I mean, they were out on Pete Alonso, because they would hammer him with, that's all you do.
Now the Metropolitans are going to win the World Series.
OMG. Baby, OMG. All right, speaking of which, I want to get into, continue with the baseball talk. OMG, Buster Posey is the new president of baseball ops here in San Francisco. Ev, I don't know your take on things. I'm assuming that locally the vibe is pretty positive. We all love Buster Posey. Guess again. I'm going to rip the guy when we continue on 95.7 The Game.
Back to 95.7 The Game.
It's Evan Giddings. It's Dan Devone on a gorgeous Saturday. Temperature is supposed to creep back into, I want to say, the 80s. I mean, right now, it's just absolutely, I was swimming, watching the sun come up, just perfect, perfect swimming conditions. They call it slack. When there's no ebb meaning the current's going out, or flood, meaning the current's coming in. Today's one of those rare slack days.
You know, I think this might be the first Saturday where I was actually up before you were. And not because I was out later than, you know, by the time you got up, but because I was actually up at like the crack ass of dawn, or before dawn, in fact. Because I was out in, as you can see on YouTube, in bear territory.
You know it. You tell the story. There you go.
You tell the whole damn world.
All right. Thank you
very
much.
This is bear territory.
We're
going
to keep an eye on Ev. We'll check in with him. It's kind of like a telethon to see whether he can keep it going all day. I want to know, what's the over and under? You think he's going to peter out?
What's the longest bender you've been on?
I would say back in the day.
36 hours.
College. I could go a good, you know. UCLA came to town once.
You're in Tucson?
And I was in Tucson, and it was an afternoon game, which they typically don't do, because Tucson in the fall gets pretty hot, right? This is September, so you're talking really hot. And it was a,
no kidding.
It was a 12 o'clock kick to accommodate ABC. And I remember, so we started cocktailing, I'm going to say about 8, and then you have the game, and then you're drinking during the game, and then after the game, you have a big barbecue and a party. I want to say I went probably a good 12 hours, 8 to 8 before I died.
You guys made it to Sonoran back?
Nice reference to the desert. Thank you very much.
That's Mexico.
Oh, that's right. There's Sonora, Arizona, and there's Sonora, Mexico. And there's also
talking about the opposite side.
There's also a Moss Beach, apparently, that neither one of us are familiar with. We're going to learn exactly where it is, a lot more about it, as we go and check in with Ray.
Is that up north, Ray?
Ray, where the hell are you? Ray, are you there? Can we have Ray?
Ray, what's up, man?
I just wanted to chime in with what everybody else has practically said, that Shanahan is taking the heart out of the team right now. Ayuk came up bad, hard for Shanahan by being a good player to an excellent player, top of the league. And now Shanahan got it in his head that, you know, he embarrassed him, so to speak, you know, and so he's been holding him down and he's messing with his head, and that's why Ayuk is messing up. And one step further, had they used Ayuk more in the Super Bowl, we would have won that game. But he used them enough to screw it up.
You a Stanford guy, Ray?
Yeah, Ray, what show? What the hell show are you listening to? We haven't talked about the Niners yet. Hey, before we get into we'll do a little Ayuk just for you, Ray. Can you tell me a little about Moss Beach and exactly where you are?
It's a great, beautiful little town on the other side of the slide area. I can't think of it now.
Like Half Moon Bay?
Pacifica or on the other side of Half Moon Bay, rather.
Oh, okay.
And it's a beautiful little town, coastal, quiet, beautiful. And most everybody there is a 49er fan, as a matter of fact. But anyway, you know, Shanahan is everybody says genius. I don't know about, he's good and great and everything, but Walsh was the only genius I've ever heard of. And it's been uphill since then. But anyway,
hey, Ray, really,
God bless you.
Ray, don't go. Are you near Mavericks?
Yes, I'm about a mile away from there.
Do you ever watch the tournaments in Mavericks? We're talking about one of the most, when it goes off, which is usually about this time of the year, I want to say.
The Borders?
It's one of the, it's a surf spot. It's a destination spot for everybody who's sponsored that surfs professionally around the world when they're going off. And it's one of the most dangerous surf spots in the world. Am I right, Ray?
Oh, my God. It's a monster. I'm not a surfer, so I don't want to say too much. But just from seeing the film, it's just one of the killer waves, so to speak. And people do it because they're awesome. You know, and honestly, the only reason why I haven't gone is because I've tried to go, but the traffic and the parking and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's worth seeing for sure.
Hey, Ray, piece of advice, because you know I love you. It's a beautiful Saturday. You live on Moss Beach. The hell with Brandon Ayuk and his red shorts, huh? Why don't you just enjoy the day?
Don't get me going on that one, man. And that's another tricky thing. Maybe Ayuk should have known better, but that's part of this head game that Shanahan is causing.
All right, thank you so much, Ray. Well, just for Ray,
I'm gonna start wearing the wrong color shorts to this show. I mean, if it really ticks you off that much, Dan, I don't want to group you in with Ray. By the way, if Ray is a Stanford supporter, not the day, but I do need to get down to Moss Beach because Mavericks is, dude. So is it because of the way that?
It's the break.
It extends that it creates the massive swells.
I don't know what creates the swell, but I know the break. I want to say it's a shore break. It's really, really dangerous. And it's a strong tide. There's a guy by the name of Mark Fu, who is a champion surfer out in Hawaii. And so when these things go off, right, you get 48 hours, right? Everybody knows that there's surf spots that around the world that this time of the year, they're just waiting. And so you could be a champion surfer, a sponsored surfer, one of the best in South Africa. You could be on the other continent. And then literally you'll get a beep, you'll get a call, you'll get a notification that you have 48 hours because Mavericks is going off. They'll catch flights, and then they'll be here within that time frame. So Mark Fu, who was a legendary surfer out in Honolulu, Hawaii, back in the day.
Pipeline?
Gets a notification.
Waimea?
Thank you very much. Holly boy, you're doing well. You get a notification from Mark Fu that it's happening out in Mavericks. He's here within 12 hours, and then less than 24 hours later, broke his neck and was dead. And that happens frequently out in Mavericks. It's
death?
It's dangerous. Yeah, it's scary. It's
well, that story seemed to skidding halt.
I didn't mean to go there. It's almost like Ray all of a sudden just talking 49ers, and I'm not exactly sure what show he was listening
to. R.I.P. Master Fu. That was interesting. I look over at Cam Williams, producer extraordinaire behind the glass, and as soon as we come on, we're wondering where the hell Moss Beach is. He starts digging in on the Niners, and Cam just throws his hands up like, Where did this come from?
I don't know. Do you want to help? You want to help Ray out? Do you have anything you want to add to Brandon? We're going to get into the Niners later in the show.
Like, get off him, man.
All right.
So first of all, he's not going anywhere. The dude's got a dead cap hit bigger than this entire station.
Yeah, the Davante Adams thing. Please, stop with that.
I find it fascinating real fast that everybody is obsessed with Davante Adams when he's a bigger diva than Brandon Ayuk is. This guy is asking out of his own team, which, by the way, is 2-2, same record as the Niners. They got playoff aspirations, I hope. I don't know. I don't really get it. Like, whether you like Brandon Ayuk or not, I hate to break it to you. He's going to be here for a while.
I like the Antonio Pierce part of this whole equation. So Antonio Pierce, this went viral that someone said, picked up a story that Davante Adams wanted out of Las Vegas, and then Antonio Pierce gave a thumbs up.
I think it was an Instagram post of someone, proposing essentially a trade or, I don't know, something about Davante Adams leaving, and he liked the picture.
And your head coach endorses it.
First of all, we can't even stop head coaches from being on social media now. We got Ayuk and all these scrubbers and youngsters. Antonio Pierce, be better.
Yeah. Well, he's not. And the Raiders suck again, which is
crazy. Be all right.
What do you mean they'll be all right?
No, they're 2-2 on the same record as the Niners, Dan.
You're gonna bet on Mr. Minshew this week? I mean,
he'll pull a rabbit out of the hat. Although, of course, as always, we'll have our locks of the week coming up in the last hour if I remember to do it. The Raiders will not be on that list.
Who do the Raiders have? Oh, they have...
They're on the road in Denver.
That's right. Ah, well, I don't know.
Bo Nix stinks, too.
Bo Nix is terrible. They just got lucky against the Jets. And by the way, I'm grinning, loving everything that's going on out there in New York with the Jets.
I thought you had them going to the Super Bowl.
No, I have never been a Jets fan. No, I just... That week one against the Niners, I just knew that it was an emotional game in which the Niners blew them out. But anyways, all right, we'll stay with baseball for a little bit. Typical, like, we're 45 minutes in the show.
Yeah, call back, Ray, and get us on something else.
Yeah, I have no idea where the hell we're going. And the caller, if you want to talk about cricket, we're here for you, right?
And we're not talking about Dan Zaks.
Thank you very much.
We're not talking about Dan Zaks.
All right. Let's get into some Buster Posey. So I hit you with a text yesterday, which apparently you don't read.
What are you talking
you
about?
No, casually no, go on. Through them. So I'm like, hey, man, we got to get into Posey. I said something to the effect.
First
like,
of all, the one's a blue moon.
First of all, here, I'm going to read to you what it is that I said. So I'm going to dig it up on my phone. I'm going verbatim here to my man, Ev. So I have hit him with
the text. I did respond to you.
You did respond.
In timely fashion.
So I said, I leave for a week and Posey is head of baseball ops. Are you out your damn mind? And then he comes in today and is like, I thought you were in on Posey. I'm like, did you not read the text? What part of are you out your damn mind? Thinks that I'm endorsing Buster Posey as the new president of baseball ops.
Well, it was somewhat of an ambivalent tone, Dan. And you are someone that doesn't necessarily predict things. Like, you don't go out on a limb and say, you know, in 2 years this guy's going to be yada, yada, yada. So the fact that you have such a strong opinion about Posey took me, which is why, in all caps, I responded, can't wait. Because I got some things that I got to say, and it actually sounds like we're on the same side.
Go ahead. No.
You texted me first and asked me if I was out of my damn mind. And yes, on time to time, on occasion, I am out of my gourd. But I will let you have the first go, the first swing, sir.
I'll start this with gentle.
Don't backpedal.
No. I'll be kind initially. And I'll probably warm up here and then start screaming at the heavens in a matter of moments. I get it. I like Buster Posey as much as anybody else. The dude is a winner. I like the way he's wired. I always have. I love his interviews. The fact that he gives you nothing. The fact that he's boring because he's not playing the game, right? He's not feeding the beast. He's not giving you crap. That's just who he is. The idea that someone like that is going to be effective as the president of baseball ops, maybe it happens. I hope it happens because I like good people to succeed and I'm with everybody else. I like Buster Posey, but you got to be kidding me that if you think that's the guy. I could be wrong because I don't know him that well when it comes to this side of the ledger, but typically that job description, the reason why it goes to academics like that of Farhan, or going back in the day, the Cashmans and the Theo Epsteins, is because it is a nerd's job these days. And there is so much more to it than just walking through the halls and saying, I'm Buster Posey, and having that it factor. It's about dealing with HR. It's about dealing with your entire minor league system. It's about dealing with payrolls, about putting together an analytics team. It's about being 10 to 12 hours in an office. And to hire a guy with no experience, just looking at it within that realm exclusively, he's unqualified, man. I don't care the fact that he can catch a good game, that he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, that he's Buster Posey. It does not translate to being successful at that particular job. If he wants to be the assistant to the GM, if he wants to be a consultant, if he wants to be a figurehead, yes, I like the idea. I think he'd be smart imparting his advice when it comes to getting free agents and or sitting down and going toe-to-toe, if you want to believe Andrew Bagley. He was the guy that got Chapman to re-sign with San Francisco in a limited capacity, but the head of baseball ops, that's biting off too much, my man.
So I personally think that this is fascinating. I do not know if there is a comp for what the Giants are trying to pull off, because... And there are former players in front offices. Like, for example, Chris Young just built the Texas Rangers into a World Series champion. And I believe he'd only been either the general manager or the president of baseball ops for a couple of seasons. So, and the Rangers were not a team that by any means was a perennial playoff contender before he got there. I think also right now, Craig Breslow in Boston, he's the... CEO of baseball. I don't think they call it president of baseball ops, but he's a former pitcher. He had also spent time previously working in front offices, so he's got a little bit of experience. Sam Fuld is another outfielder. I believe he's high up in the Phillies organization, but I don't believe he's the president, because that would be Dave Dombrowski's role. There are players that have gone into executive roles that have been successful, and have been successful at the highest level. You look at George Brett, who I think is still the VP of baseball ops in Kansas City. Nolan Ryan became actually the team president for the Texas Rangers. Those would be the two players that have taken over their own teams that they played for and have turned them into competitors. The Giants right now are in need of a facelift. And the best facelift around, by far, bar none, unequivocally, is Buster Posey. But where you lose me is when it comes to baseball, because I think that Buster Posey would be far more fit to be a manager or work as a coach or even keep his place on the board, which he hasn't relinquished, by the way. He's still technically on the board of owners and also acting as the president of baseball ops, which indicates to me, Dan, that this is more of a title as opposed to a job description. They are using him to replace what previously could not be spun into a positive light, which was Farhan Zaidi. It was an unsalvageable situation with Farhan. They had to do something, and I completely agree with moving on from him, and I think you do too. In fact, we championed for it throughout the season. But Buster Posey, as a day-to-day, 12 hours a day guy, ain't gonna happen. There's no chance he would take this job if that's what it required from him. Now, what I'm very curious to see is how he goes about hiring, who he brings in to help him. And to be honest, the GM under him is probably going to be the guy that's doing everything that you're talking about that he won't, because he's got four kids. I don't think he would take the job in the first place if he had to do that. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy to me. But what he does believe in is the San Francisco Giants brand. And he believes and loves the game of baseball. So I love the fact that the Giants have taken him in and turned him into basically the public figure that Farhan Zaidi could never be. When it comes to baseball, though, I am very skeptical, because I don't know how you all of a sudden reform this organization with someone that has literally never done that before, and oh, by the way, was in a jersey 3 years ago.
Speaking of which, you want to know what his best role would be with the San Francisco Giants? Is to take off the suit, put on a uniform, and you can hit cleanup on that baseball team. We could use you. But as far as the head of baseball ops, again,
he's only 37.
If you're going to outsource, to your point, you're right. I'm with you. He has got to get it right, because he's going to insulate himself, and he's got to get everybody in line. He's got to get a G. He cannot miss on his GM. But if you're outsourcing everything, because typically the head of baseball ops like that of Farhan wants to be able to oversee everything. You want your input on everything. And if you're outsourcing all of these positions, well then, why are you the head of baseball ops? The guys that usually succeed at this typically right now, I'll give you a perfect example. Scott Harris, your guy. The guy who revolutionized and changed the Detroit Tigers. He's a former GM of the San Francisco Giants, went to Detroit. He's the guy, and I think we'd all agree, as you laid out last week, that that might be the envy of just about every Major League Baseball team. Young, players under team control, and good. They got their future in front of them. The guy that changed all of that is Scott Harris. Scott Harris was in San Francisco as a GM. He's the head of baseball operations in Detroit. Why do I pick him out? Because he is the typical guy that gets these jobs and does the sort of about face, and you pointed him and saying, thank you very much for changing the way, the culture here in Detroit. What's his background? And I do want to go here. He's a UCLA econ major. He went to the Columbia School of Business. That's where these guys come from. They're academics. You know who also is good? Is Mark Elias out in Baltimore. He's he's a Princeton mathematician. Chernoff went to Yale. These guys are all brainiacs. They're nerds. Farhan was a nerd. We just got the wrong nerd. That's who does this now, because it's about analytics. It's about all the minutiae that now caters to these sort of guys. And it all started with Brian Cashman back in the day. And that's been sort of the trend, bringing in a guy who has never done it before and is a former player to now oversee all of this. You know, I have a friend who went in. He always tells a story. He said he went into Sandy Alderson's office when he was with the New York Mets, the former GM. Was he the baseball head of baseball ops?
He was the one who started Moneyball. Like, if you really want to go back to the roots of it, he hired Billy Bean, and then Billy Bean took over for him when he left.
And then he got the huge contract in New York. And so he said he went into his office once. And this friend of mine said that Sandy Alderson, on his entire office, was nothing but names. Names of the players on his current roster, the New York Mets, and everything about him. Literally everything about this player. Not only that, he had every player's name and tendencies and all the algorithms of the guys in AAA. And went right on to AA, to single A, Tidewater. He knew everything about every single player. And all of this stuff that he has to pour through. And it's a job that literally took up 14 hours of his day. You've got to dive into that thing. And to think that Buster Posey, and just to see him, for all of us just to pass judgment on the fact that he was a great baseball player, he's a great guy, that it's going to translate to him being the head of baseball ops and being effective at it with inexperience, even if he hires the right guys. It is the biggest risk San Francisco has taken in recent memory, including the Farhan hire, and it may have set that franchise back some 10 years.
I'm not going to go as far as say it set them back, and I guess this is where we deviate. But I do wonder how tapped in Buster Posey is. Like, I think Buster Posey is able to make the kinds of things happen, like getting a Matt Chapman deal done. I would say that's already on him. From what we know, he was the man that made that deal come to fruition. That's also why I don't believe that Blake Snell is coming back, because if Buster Posey was a deal closer, I think he would have been able to get the Snell deal done around the same time or before the Chapman deal got done. So I don't have any issues with Posey being involved. And I think, quite frankly, that he's the guy to negotiate high-leverage situations. That's who you want in the room.
Why is that? Because I've heard this from a lot of people.
Because he commands respect in any room that he's in. From big-name baseball players.
I get that. And I've heard that from actually some local hosts here, 95.7 The Game, and a lot of people. It seems to be a consensus. You want Buster Posey in the room because he commands that respect. I would disagree that when it comes to dollars and cents, I don't really care that you played. It's, yeah, maybe initially, oh, Buster Posey's sitting across from me. When it comes to contracts, Scott Boras is going to bottom line you regardless of who the hell you are. And the player doesn't really care. The player has no say. It's Boras that's going to get him his biggest deal, whether it's Boras or any other agent. So, yeah, hey, whoa, Buster, you look good in the suit. And my goodness, it's good to see you in a discussion like this. But this is what we want, and I don't care if you're Scott Boras, I don't care if you're Farhan, I don't care who the hell you are. This is our bottom line. And the idea that, ooh, well, it's Buster Posey. Nah, let me hedge off of that. I tell you what, instead of 6 years, we'll take four. And instead of 30 mil a year, we'll take 26. You want to know why? Because I respect the hell out of you. I don't see it.
No, but that's not the point, in my opinion. It's if there is a deal in a similar plane, right? Like, if you're talking about dollars and cents, right? So let's say there's an even five-year $100 million deal on the table from the Giants, and there's a similar deal from, I don't know, the Texas Rangers. I had zero faith before this year that that player would choose the San Francisco Giants, and a big reason why is because the man pitching the Giants was Farhan Zaidi. Now, the man pitching that even deal is now Buster Posey. That significantly improves your odds of acquiring a free agent. Now, is that going to get you Juan Soto? No way in hell. Is that going to get you Blake Snell to even come back? I don't believe so. But your boy Willy Adames, I think he now, the chances of him coming to San Francisco improve with Buster Posey selling the Giants as opposed to Zaidi. I know when we get back, because we have to take a break in a minute here, my concerns lie with Buster Posey's philosophical tendencies. Because while I also believe that he is better in the boardroom, I'm not sure that's what he really wants. I'm going to tell you why that is, but I'm not sure Buster Posey, he can go out and get a big fish. I'm not really sure that's the way that he wants this Giants team to go, though. And that's where my bigger concern is.
All right, we're going to continue with the Buster Posey conference. Man, we went from Moss Beach and, you know, this man cracking a beer at 4 o'clock in the morning. Suddenly we're
Irish coffee.
We're in the trees, and Buster Posey, who usually you would think would bring the room together, and we're just screaming at each other. We'll continue to talk about Buster Posey. Where is everybody at? You in on Buster? You think he could change things? I hope so, because I like Buster. Don't get it wrong. But we'll continue to talk about the former catcher now becoming the head of baseball ops for the San Francisco Giants. It's Evan Giddings. It's Dan DeBone. It's Cam Williams here on 95.7 The Game.